From Spokane Public Radio, it's SPR News Today. I'm Owen Henderson. It's January 12th, 2026. On today's show, legislative sessions are getting underway this morning in both Washington and Idaho. Both states hope to address budget shortfalls, but those aren't the only issues on the table. Plus, as Spokane City Council members argue over the wording in a resolution recognizing Martin Luther King Jr. Day and Juneteenth, we hear both sides of the discussion over whether non-binding resolutions are even worth the council's time. And an investigation by our partners at KNKX Public Radio and Cascade PBS revealed a city employee in Bellingham used ChatGPT for help writing requirements that could have tipped the scales in how the city awarded a large contract. Those stories and more coming up on SPR News Today. Washington's 2026 legislative session kicks off this morning. A big focus is addressing the state's $2.3 billion budget deficit. Governor Bob Ferguson suggests tapping the state's rainy day fund and using revenue generated through the Climate Commitment Act to help with the shortfall. Senate Majority Leader Jamie Peterson says the governor's proposal to use funds intended for reducing emissions is not ideal.
Because we are in the second year of a biennium facing a significant shortfall, and so we're going to have to make difficult choices. That will be one of the big themes of this session.
Senate Republican leader John Braun says his caucus supports using climate dollars to help deal with the deficit. That money would go toward low-income tax rebates. Braun, however, is opposed to tapping the rainy day fund. Faced with proposed cuts to the state's education budget, Washington State Superintendent Chris Rakedahl is calling on lawmakers to reform the state's tax code.
It's broken, and it's time for Democrats to admit that. It's time for Republicans to drop the rhetoric and say all taxes are bad.
Rakedahl's comments come 2 weeks after Governor Bob Ferguson unveiled his operating budget for next year. Ferguson's proposal includes around $800 million of cuts, $147 million of which would come from education funding. Rakedahl says the governor did his best with a difficult situation as the state grapples with its multi-billion dollar deficit, but the state can't afford any cuts to education funding. While he didn't offer a specific solution, Rakedahl says Ferguson's proposed millionaire's tax could be part of the answer, and he wants lawmakers to at least start the tax reform conversation during the legislative session. One of the first bills Washington state senators on the Law and Justice Committee will hear this week would make the standards more consistent for elected and appointed leaders in law enforcement. The bill also calls on elected sheriffs to enforce not only the U.S. Constitution, but also state laws. Previously, some Washington sheriffs have said they will not enforce state gun restrictions. A group supporting so-called constitutional sheriffs opposes the measure and accuses the state of stealing authority from voters who elect them. Meanwhile, the State Coalition for Police Accountability supports the bill and calls it one of their top priorities this session. Governor Brad Little and other top Republicans continue to say Idaho is in a good economic position ahead of today's start to the legislative session, despite a projected budget deficit. James Dawson has more.
The latest forecast shows Idaho ending the fiscal year about $40 million in the red. That could balloon to at least $475 million, depending on how the state conforms with federal tax changes passed by Congress last year. House Democratic Leader Elena Rebel said Thursday she's not optimistic about Idaho's economic outlook.
We already have serious problems and fallout from the cuts we've already made, and those cuts are going to get a lot more drastic given the severe revenue shortfalls we're looking at.
House Speaker Mike Moyle downplayed those concerns.
The state of Idaho is in good shape. It's going to be good. We're all going to do well. We'll do our best to protect education and those important budgets. But at the same time, we'll make those needed adjustments to balance the budget.
While Governor Brad Little wants to fully conform to those tax changes, Moyle says the legislature might pick and choose to avoid a significant revenue hit. James Dawson, Boise State Public Radio News.
Artificial intelligence could help deter wolves from preying on livestock in Washington. Northwest Public Broadcasting's Courtney Flatt explains.
In Washington, the idea would be to place remote cameras, sensors, and trackers where livestock and wolves roam. The system constantly transmits data. It would use in-house tech when there's no cell service. Eric Schmidt is with the nonprofit Wildlife Protection Solutions. He says artificial intelligence could remotely activate deterrents to scare off wolves.
This can be different types of sirens, flashing lights, randomized playback of MP3 sounds at loud volume, scent dispensing, lightning simulators.
It would immediately notify people like range riders, ranchers, or wildlife managers. Schmidt says similar technology has worked in Germany and Colorado, but it isn't foolproof. Batteries have to be monitored, sensors have to be placed correctly, and dealing with public grazing allotments could be hard. I'm Courtney Flatt.
Spokane City Council is squabbling over the technicalities of a non-binding resolution re-emphasizing cultural celebrations like Martin Luther King Jr. Day and Juneteenth. SPR's Eliza Billingham reports.
Spokane City Council is not debating whether Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day or Juneteenth are important. All council members say those days mark pivotal moments in American history. Councilmember Michael Cathcart has introduced amendments because he worries the resolution as written accidentally excludes other celebrations like Lunar New Year or Holocaust Remembrance. But more broadly, he asks, what's the point of a non-binding measure?
Frankly, I would be fine if we never did another messaging resolution ever again.
A couple years ago, Cathcart worked with Council President Betsy Wilkerson to try to make Juneteenth a citywide holiday, but negotiations with labor unions kept that ordinance from passing. Wilkerson thinks resolutions still do the work of making people feel seen.
There's so much going on in our country around, to me, exclusion of Black and Brown people. Why would we not want to acknowledge the organizations that are standing in the gap to really support these people and fight injustices going forward?
City Council is set to vote on the amendment and the resolution tonight at 6. I'm Eliza Billingham reporting.
Washington Democratic leaders say there are no plans to hold hearings for two initiatives backed by conservative group Let's Go Washington once the legislative session begins today. One of the measures would expand parents' rights in public schools, undoing an expansion of student rights passed by lawmakers last year. Another would bar transgender girls from girls' sports. Let's Go Washington founder Brian Haywood says the initiatives have bipartisan support and calls the lawmakers' decision not to hold hearings a, quote, blatant slap in the face, end quote. Senate Majority Leader Jamie Peterson says the initiatives wouldn't make it through the legislature even if they had hearings. If the Secretary of State's office approves signatures collected in support of the initiatives, voters will likely see these measures on their ballots in November. The U.S. Supreme Court is set to hear an Idaho case with far-reaching implications for trans rights tomorrow. A trans student at Boise State University had challenged Idaho's ban on trans athletes competing in women's and girls' sports. Courts initially sided with the plaintiff and blocked the law, then narrowed the block to only apply to the plaintiff herself, not other athletes. Idaho appealed the case to the Supreme Court in 2024. Since then, the plaintiff asked both an Idaho federal court and the high court to drop the case, saying she wanted to focus on graduating. The federal judge declined to do so, but the Supreme Court could still dismiss the case after it hears oral arguments. Nearly 30 states currently ban trans students from playing sports consistent with their gender identity. The city of Bellingham is launching an investigation into how one of its employees used ChatGPT to help award a large city contract. That's after records uncovered by our news partners KNKX and Cascade PBS show the employee asked the chatbot for help tipping the scales toward one vendor over another. With me now is the reporter behind that investigation, Murrow News Fellow and one-time Spokaneite, Nate Sanford. Thanks for joining me, Nate.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So, Nate, can you just tell us a little bit more about this contract and how the city employee used ChatGPT to word it?
Last year, the city of Bellingham was looking for a new utility billing software, and the city employee tasked with it basically had to put together this RFP, request for proposals, trying to solicit applications from different contracts and from different companies and find the best deal for taxpayers. And then last summer, I ended up filing a series of records requests looking for records of when government officials had used ChatGPT. I was just curious about if they were using it, what local governments were using it for. This employee's chat history was one of the ones that popped up in that. And I think the thing about it that stood out for me was that there were a few messages where this employee was asking ChatGPT to write some of the requirements in this utility billing contract in a way that would, quote, exclude one specific company, in a way that would favor this other company. So that kind of raised a bit of a red flag. And that's when we decided to start looking into this more.
Now, you mentioned that this came to light as part of a broader series of requests, and we'll touch on that a bit later. But for now, we know that this employee asked ChatGPT to write these contract requirements to subtly favor one vendor over another. But is there any evidence that the staff member had a financial motivation to pick one of these companies?
Yeah, there's no evidence that the staffer had any sort of like financial motive or that there were any sort of kickbacks or other ties to any of the companies. In some of the messages, there's kind of a sense they expressed that they were more driven by almost like a sense of urgency. In one email to a coworker, they said that they felt like they had already found the best company. They felt like it would be redundant and kind of just jumping through hoops to go through this RFP process. But the thing is, local governments have to follow these pretty strict laws for a reason, right? Because this is taxpayer money. And there's this sense that public procurement should be this fair and neutral process. So kind of regardless of the motivation, you still want to make sure that it's a neutral process where one company is not being explicitly favored over another or excluded.
And with this particular contract, how did it end up being awarded?
Yeah, the company that the staffer favored got the contract. And we can't say for sure like the extent to which the language produced by ChatGPT was the determining factor in that. But it is relevant and notable.
So the city of Bellingham is now investigating this case. What's the status on that?
They launched the investigation shortly after I reached out for a comment in December. And you know, because of the investigation and personnel issues and all that, they say that there's not a lot they can say about the investigation and what's going on. But this isn't really something they were aware of. And you know, the mayor says that they're taking it seriously and that they try really hard to make sure that the train staff to follow a sort of neutral and fair public procurement process. But yeah, they're expecting that to wrap up sometime early this year, but still kind of a lot that's unclear until that happens.
So as you mentioned, you put in a broad series of requests for this information about how and when artificial intelligence is being used by local governments. What questions does this latest investigation leave you with when it comes to the use of ChatGPT and other chatbots for municipal government work?
Yeah, you know, I think there are a few different aspects. And I talked to one legal expert who does a lot of stuff involving procurement fraud. And he was saying that, like, you know, it's not unheard of for people to subtly write bid requirements to favor a specific vendor. That's an old issue, but it's maybe being possibly enabled or made easier with this new technology, which I think is really interesting. And I also think it's notable that, you know, ChatGPT didn't push back on this employee's request. You know, throughout their entire conversation, ChatGPT never questioned why a government employee was asking it to help exclude a vendor from a public contract. You know, instead, ChatGPT very enthusiastically offered help, right? Here's some language that will ensure that this company doesn't get this contract. What else can I help you with? How can I help you refine this? Like, there wasn't kind of the pushback that you might expect. So I think that raises some interesting questions about just guardrails and kind of what moving forward with the technology, how that might play out.
If it's not unheard of for people to try and tip the scales one way or another when writing contracts, is that something we just wouldn't have known about because there wasn't a paper trail of it before? And is the use of AI the only reason we would have found this out?
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance that this would have been noticed if it wasn't for those messages popping up, because the requirements themselves that ChatGPT generated, they're all pretty subtly worded. And the legal expert I talked to is saying that, yeah, these cases are normally really hard to detect because people are subject matter experts and they'll write these contract requirements in a way that is really subtly favored towards one specific company. I think that's a really interesting aspect, is that if people start using AI for stuff like this, it does kind of create a paper trail. I also think you'll see a lot more people being more careful going forward in the future about what they're putting into ChatGPT. You know, both government employees and also like in the private sector too, like your chatbot conversations are subpoenaable if there's a lawsuit. So I think it's just something more people will start to realize in the coming years.
Nate Sanford is a Murrow Fellow for KNKX in partnership with Cascade PBS. You can find this story as well as his other reporting on the use of AI in local governments on our website, SpokanePublicRadio.org. Nate, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
SPR News Today is a production of Spokane Public Radio. Reporting today was contributed by Anna Marie Yanni, Sammy West, Amy Radel, James Dawson, Courtney Flatt, Eliza Billingham, Nate Sanford, and me, Owen Henderson. I'm also the host and producer. Thanks for listening. It's SPR.